thing about these purges, but I'm going skipping on this. I'm not going to bother with the first purge.
Purge 2 I liked. Purge 3 I couldn't get to the end of. I will try and watch this when it's on Netflix.
And the thing, it says the first Purge, but it's like the fifth Purge movie.
Right.
I'm getting sick of Hollywood doing this.
But this is the origin of the Purge.
Okay.
They're traveling back in time to when the Purge began.
Like Sicario is Sicario 2, but it says Day of the Soldado.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sick of this stuff. It's like, let's go back to the numbers. I liked the numbers. And all the X-Men movies. It's like, I don't know how many are out.
I can't follow that timeline at all anymore.
Yeah, the big picture is coming up next. We have three more to go here. The Incredibles 2, it's got 503.8 million. It's been out for 4 weeks. I'm going to see it on this one, still haven't. Did you like it?
Yeah, I like the first Incredibles, but not enough that I want to see it again in the theater. So
okay.
It's not like Dory, where my wife was like, oh, we got to go see the Dory. Mm-hmm. This one's probably rented for me.
All right. And number two here this week is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I wanted to see it, but I'm going on rent it for this one because I got other movies to see, like Mr. Rogers. Tell me about Jurassic World.
I will say go see it in the theater because it's the kind of movie that begs to be seen in the theater, but it really should be called Jurassic World 2, Stupid People versus Dinosaurs.
All right.
Because it is an endless succession of people making bad decisions and doing stupid, irrational things mm-hmm. that inevitably lead to them getting eaten by dinosaurs. That said,
I love seeing people get eaten by dinosaurs. Though.
This may be the dumbest script ever written by man.
Really?
That said, the actors in it give it their all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody shows up for this. Nobody's standing around being like, look, this script is garbage. I'm taking a paycheck. No, they do their best to sell it.
All right.
And it's worth seeing a movie with a script this dumb and the cast actually trying.
Now, I see it's a double feature at the drive-in. If I can't catch it there, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to rent it.
That's a great drive-in double feature right there.
And at number one in the background is the theme to it. It is Ant-Man and the Wasp, made $75.8 million over the weekend. I saw it. I really liked it.
I thought
it was just as good as the first one.
I loved it. I agree with you. I think it was every bit as good as the first one. I got two problems with it.
Go ahead.
The end of the first act drags a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're introducing all these characters and all this stuff is going on, but it's a momentary like pause in the pacing and then everything gets back on track. The other thing that kind of bugged me about it is they go out of their way to put Scott Lang, who was Ant-Man, back in the same circumstances he was in the first movie.
Okay.
Where he's running from law enforcement and the bad guys and maybe the good guys. And it's like, it felt forced. That mm-hmm. aspect of it really felt... They set it up brilliantly because they tie it into Captain America's Civil War.
Sure.
So they set it up brilliantly, but just as a narrative device, it's like, guys, you did this the first time. Give me something a little bit different.
I agree.
And it's got Walton Goggins in it. Anything that has Walton Goggins
in it. Oh, he's
fantastic
in it. Yeah.
Absolutely worth seeing.
He's fantastic in it. This has been Watch This. Thank you once again, Derek, for doing the See It, Rent It, Skip It portion of... Watch This, and the big picture is coming up next. Everybody have a wonderful night. I will be back on Friday doing Sucking in the 70s from 2 to 5. My name is Chris Earle. Thanks again for listening to your Freeform station. It is WMFO in Medford.
And now, before the next show starts, let's enjoy an intermission. You'll find our snack bar chock full of good things to eat and drink. Tasty, tempting hot dogs, thirst-quenching soft drinks, fresh, crunchy popcorn, a complete assortment of delicious candy, and a full line of cigarettes. You've plenty of time, so visit the snack bar now. A tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show. For your convenience, we shall keep you informed of the remaining intermission time, 3 minutes before the next show starts. The next show will start in 2 minutes.
Just a minute, folks. Yes, that's all it takes to visit our refreshment counter in the lobby. There you'll find popcorn and an assortment of popular candy bars to please every taste. Try one of these delicious candy bars. Big Time. Butternut. Milkshake. Payday. Topped with Hollywood's super rich coating of the kind you like best. They taste wonderful, they're delicious, they're nutritious. Get one at our confection counter in the lobby now.
The next show will start in 1 minute.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915. Wait, did I just say Derek Gary with you tonight? No, Shea Spillane, no. No, Shea Spillane tonight. You're stuck with me until 9 o'clock. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Please don't force me to talk for the next 2 hours. Call in. Love to hear from the listeners. Coming up later tonight, are some ideas so bad? Some ideas so dangerous? Some ideas so caustic to the existence of our republic that we should remove the people who suggest them from office? I say yes. And we will talk about one of those ideas that is coming from someone dangerously close to home and question whether or not that person should be returned to office. So we'll get to that sometime after the 8 o'clock hour. Shea Spillane is, among other things, intelligent, smart, well-read, funny, opinionated, and one of the toughest people I know. Shea, for those who don't know, which is pretty much everyone in the listening audience, I'm guessing, hurt her knee a couple of weeks ago and found out late last week that she had, in fact, partially torn her meniscus. Shea has been battling her way up and down the stairs here at WMFO, cringing in pain while on the air, and putting on a brave face through the whole thing. Well, now that she's actually getting some medical attention for this, she is taking it easy. So, depending on how her recovery goes, Shea may be back next week. She may be back in a couple of weeks. She will be back at some point. Until then, you will have me. I will be here. If the news warrants, we will talk about the news. Maybe I'll slip in an episode of Hear It Wow, as my good friend Chris Earle suggested, as we get into August and things get super, super, super quiet. In the meantime, things, of course, are anything but super quiet around here. Hope everybody had a nice 4th of July. I know I did. Sorry we missed you. There wasn't a heck of a lot going on news-wise last week. But, oh boy, there's been plenty going on news-wise this week. And once I get logged into everything and get everything squared away, we will get into that part of the program. In the meantime, let's hear from our good friend Robert R. Way. Oh, man. The worst part about all of this is not having anyone to cover for me when I press the wrong button. News. The widow of a man killed by a drug user minutes after being stopped by a state trooper called on state police and other authorities to do right by her fatherless kids and find out what happened. Alexis Weiss told the Boston Herald, quote, they need to be held accountable outside Middlesex Superior Court in Woburn, where Linda Wolf pleaded not guilty to motor vehicle homicide in connection with a tragedy last summer on Interstate 95 in Reading. State police had previously pulled over Linda Wolf as she was traveling down the highway. She was allegedly taking anxiety and pain medications on August 24th while on a trip to the beach. She was weaving all over the road, and state police received several 911 calls about her driving. She was then involved in a crash on Route 3 in Burlington, but the breath test device installed in her car allowed the engine to start, and State Trooper Daniel Hannafin let her continue on her way. Less than 20 minutes later, according to the Boston Herald, prosecutors alleged DeWolf struck a car on I-95 in Reading, causing it to spin into oncoming traffic where it fatally hit Christopher Weiss on his motorcycle. Obviously, the sympathy extends to the widow in this case. And, as we tend to do on this show, whenever these sorts of stories come up, I like to deal with what I call the zero moment. And that is the moment where someone takes an action that sets the rest of the chain of events in motion. And sometimes it's very clear to see what that zero moment is, and sometimes it's not. Now, in the case of the driver, the fact that she's even operating a vehicle with a with an interlock device, which is basically a breathalyzer that is attached to your steering wheel, ought to be a message to the state trooper that you want to tread very carefully with this person and maybe hold her to a higher standard than you would somebody who is not driving with an interlock device. Does that qualify as profiling? Maybe it does. At the very least, it's the sort of thing that you would expect a state trooper or any other police officer to take note of. They'd received several calls about her ahead of this accident. And she gets into an accident, is able to leave the accident, and then goes and gets into a fatal. Now, the real zero moment of this happens when DeWolf decides to take anti-anxiety medication and get behind the wheel. That's the beginning of the whole thing. But the zero moment for this accident occurs when this state trooper says, all right, your car's operable, you look good enough to drive, you can go. What is a state trooper? Is the state trooper following protocol in that situation? Does the state trooper have any reservations about letting this woman go? How is she presenting herself? Does she seem normal? Is he aware that they've had all of these phone calls leading up to this accident? We have to assume yes, but we don't know. And that's where it becomes a little bit tricky to sort of assign blame in this and say, well, you know, it absolutely should have been, she absolutely should have been pulled over. She never should have been allowed behind the wheel. If the state trooper had only done his job, people would still be alive today. You can jump to that conclusion. And in the case of the man's widow, in the case of Aunt Alexis Weiss, absolutely. You know, in her view, the state trooper is the one who is responsible for this because he should have stopped this driver. It gets into a gray area. The one person you can absolutely clearly, without question, assign blame to is DeWolf, who's taking pain meds, she's taking anxiety meds, she's on the road. Most of those medications have a thing on the label that says, do not drive or operate heavy machinery while you are taking this. But she's on the road anyway. Maybe she made a solid case for herself with the trooper. And time of day plays into this too, because you don't expect somebody completely out of their mind on booze or drugs to be on the road early in the day. Although I'm sure there are state troopers out there that would correct me on that. I'm sure there are state troopers that see that sort of thing all the time. So the zero moment here absolutely belongs to DeWolf, the driver, who is responsible for the accident. But there's also the question of the involvement of this state trooper, who I'm sure feels terrible about it for what that's worth. I'm sure he's grappling with the decision that he made. State troopers let people go from accidents all the time, and they don't go down the road and cause a fatal. It's an unusual case. I don't know that you can pin this on the trooper. And you want to call up and say, I'm soft on cops, 855-915-9636. I know I have a reputation for being soft on cops. I like the police. I like the work that they do. I think bad cops should be thrown out, obviously. But put yourself in that situation. Someone's been in an accident. People who've been in accidents, most of us have been in a car accident one time or another. People who've been in accidents are shaky. They're sometimes a little disoriented. What is the standard where you as a state trooper are going to look at someone who's been in an accident and say, okay, you are clearly a problem. You need to get in the back of the cruiser and you are not going to get to drive away from this. I don't know. It is tough to assign blame in this particular case. We will see what happens. In national news, Donald Trump's pick for Supreme Court Justice to replace Anthony Kennedy is Brett Kavanaugh. He is a Yalie who teaches at Harvard, which basically ticks off the two most important boxes for the Supreme Court. If you want to be on the United States Supreme Court, you either have to go to Yale or you have to go to Harvard. This guy went to Yale and teaches at Harvard. I don't think you get any better than that. You have to get on mic three if you're gonna chime in.
Oh no, I meant that was
Mr. Oh, Chris Earl is still.
How do you like the pick? I'm still here hanging around. I wanted to hear about your July 4th, but let's hear what you said.
We can talk about July 4th if you want to.
No, let's do this and then talk about July 4th next. What'd you think of the pick?
I don't know what I think about the pick. I know that he's a Yalie who teaches it. Here's the first thing I can tell you about the pick. I am sick of Yale and Harvard grads on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
The United States Supreme Court is not meant to be the Harvard-Yale debate team.
I agree.
Going up against each other. There are other good law schools in the country.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see a Supreme Court justice nominated who graduated from Georgetown or graduated from Northwestern.
Sure.
Or even who graduated from BC, although it's the same problem. It's like they all went to Northeast liberal arts colleges.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the Harvard alma mater cheer that they do?
Fight fiercely, Harvard.
Well, there's that one, and there's also H-A-R with a V, V-A-R, V-A-R, V-A-R with a D, Harvard, 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 go boys.
That's not working for me.
No.
It's really not working for me.
I'd like to see him do that. Like, when he gets in, I want to see him do that on the Supreme Court. I bet you some other people will chime in with him. That'd be kind of fun. I like fun. You know how I like fun.
I would think. Those debate, there must be some moment when they're like sitting in chambers, you know, outside the court where they're like singing their fight songs.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they're doing their secret handshakes, the crazy Masonic handshakes that they do.
Yeah. So the first problem that I get with this is I'm sick of Harvard and Yale guys.
Yes.
Okay. Now that said, what we know about Kavanaugh. And I'll get to the outrage in a second.
I like his last name. I don't like that he spells it with a K though.
Yeah, that's a little weird. He's Catholic. He's from the Washington D.C. area, but he's Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
He was
hardcore.
Not only was he an altar boy, but he's still very, very active in the church. He works in the soup kitchen now.
Come on.
And well, this is according to him. I mean, it's like he's. Catholic. He's not a high holy day Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
He's in there every week.
This is also according to him. I'd love to go down every week and see him in the soup kitchen. What is he there for, 20 minutes and leaves?
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him.
You know what I don't like is everybody complaining that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. It will never be overturned.
Well,
what's your opinion on that?
Well, now this is now we start to get into the interesting aspects of this, because as soon as it was announced, as soon as Kavanaugh was announced, the protests began.
Of course.
Okay. And two of the more ridiculous aspects of the protests.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big protest going on outside the Supreme Court where they had dozens of people out there screaming and yelling and making noise.
Mm-hmm.
And they were waving signs that said, you know, oppose Kavanaugh. They had actually had signs printed ahead of time for several different possible nominees.
Uh-huh. Dewey defeats Truman?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They had signs printed for several possible nominees, including Thomas Hardiman and Raymond Ketheridge.
Was Tina Turner on there too?
No. So you show up
Oprah.
with boxes of signs to cover every possibility just because.
Of course. Because they want to get there and they want to basically, you know, raise the pressure on everybody.
It doesn't matter who it is the point.
Mm-hmm. That's what they just do. That's their job.
It doesn't
Being
matter who it is.
Professional
is
pains in the ass.
Here's the other great one. The Women's March sent out a tweet.
The Women's March?
At 9:46. The announcement took place at 9:00.
Mm-hmm.
So at 9:46, the Women's March sends out a tweet that reads, as as follows, and I quote, nothing has been changed. In response to Donald Trump's nomination of XX to the Supreme Court of the United States, the Women's March released the following statement.
XX. They never took it out. They never put an actual name in there.
Trump's announcement today is a death sentence for thousands of women in the United States.
Oh, my God.
A death sentence for thousands of women in the United States. Judge Brett Kavanaugh, spelled C-A-V-E-N-A-U-G-H.
So they got that wrong.
Nomination threatens to move our nation's highest court dangerously to the right and further erode protections for almost every marginalized group in America.
Was this a tweet?
This was a tweet. You had 46 minutes to get the spelling of the name right.
Yes. Get rid of XX.
You had 46 minutes to replace XX with his actual name, and you did not do this.
Yep.
This is where we are.
Maybe add the Elton John, Donald Trump photo.
Like,
maybe throw that in there.
Here's what would have been fantastic. I think this could have been the greatest troll of all time. And if any of President Trump's people are listening, I want you to keep this one in the back pocket for the next one. Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg probably ain't going to be around there too much longer. I think Trump gets...
RBG now.
I think Trump gets to appoint one more before he's done.
Yeah.
Keep this one in your back pocket. Don't tell anybody who you're going to... You know, same thing. Keep it a mystery.
Yep.
Let everybody on the left come out and get their pre-written tweets together and their pre-printed signs together and then nominate Bill Clinton.
That would have been great.
Could you imagine if he nominated Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
And then you've got all of these leftists jumping up and down and screaming, no, no, no.
Yeah.
Clinton. No, Clinton. No, we hate Clinton.
Yeah.
Because they would have had to. That's why they're there. They're there just to be seen, just to oppose.
Yeah.
Not because they know anything about Kavanaugh. Not because they know anything about any of these nominees.
Well, they're sponsored. They're professional pains in the ass, and they're sponsored. And they basically make a nice wage getting in other people's ways.
So, during his speech on Monday night, Kavanaugh made a point of using the word precedent in describing his views on the law. And the interesting thing about Kavanaugh is Kavanaugh has served on the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the most influential district court in the United States for the last 12 years.
All right.
Short of they're one rung below the Supreme Court. All the courts of appeals are roughly equal, but D.C. Court of Appeals tends to hear like the really big stuff.
Yeah.
In those 12 years, he has issued 300 opinions across a wide range of areas. And he has shown himself to be a strict constructionist.
Okay.
Which means he takes the Constitution as written and says, what room do we have here? What does the Constitution, what would the founding fathers do?
Right. Okay.
What would the Constitution do is the way that he views these things. So for him to bring up precedent in his speech basically answers that question of Roe v. Wade. Because Roe v. Wade is precedent in the United States. And Kavanaugh, in invoking precedent in his speech, is basically saying, I respect the law of the land. I respect the law as written. I am not going to come in here and start tearing things up. I'm not going to gut things.
Right.
That still leaves a lot of wiggle room to chip away at those things.
Now, how old is he? He's in his 50s, right?
He's younger. He's 53. He's barely older than we are.
His wife's hot.
She's no Elaine Gorsuch, but she is very attractive.
Yeah.
She's hot. Very attractive.
I was wondering if it was one of his daughters at first.
She's from Texas. And you don't want to mess with those.
No.
She's West Texas. You absolutely don't want to mess with those.
Girls from Texas are gorgeous, though.
They are, but boy, you know who wears the pants in those marriages, and it ain't the husband.
Well, when he's away at the soup kitchen, that's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I don't know that I want to.
Maybe she's not Catholic, you know.
I don't know that I want to earn the wrath of a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah,
just saying.
True. That's true.
So we've heard all these, you know, well, we know what the March for Women says. This is a death sentence for thousands of women in America. No, it's not.
Well, you know what, though? This actually surprises me because I didn't know that there was an organization called the March of Women.
Yeah, no, it's the Women's March.
Or the Women's March.
You're thinking of the March of Dimes.
Yeah, of the March of Dimes, right. Yeah. Not, it's the Judean People's Front.
It's the People's Front of Judea. Next, you're going to call it the March of Dames, and then we're in real trouble.
The March of Dames,
then,
kid.
Then we're in real trouble. No, it's the Women's March.
I did a comedy show at the March of Dames.
Yeah, thousands of women are going to... Hyperbole like this does nobody any favors.
So who's tweeting this? Who's the head of the March of Women?
Somebody who can't figure out that there's a big XX in the tweet, apparently.
I bet you it's a guy. That's why.
Yeah.
I bet you it's a guy.
Of course.
Yeah, he messed up.
Women actually pay attention to the stuff that they say. Guys are just like, yeah, get it out of here.
Yeah, they're all in charge. And you know what? And there was some grunt that was working for him that sent out the tweet, and it was a guy.
It's 9:46 at night, so it's whatever intern drew the short straw and is still stuck in the office. There is one interesting wrinkle to all of this. And this has been brought up by some Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a 100% legitimate complaint.
I like how you use the word wrinkle.
Donald Trump is potentially facing indictment.
Okay.
If he is indicted, if he is brought to trial, it will happen at the United States Supreme Court, which basically puts Donald Trump in the position of selecting the judges who will hear his trial.
Yeah.
And I think any of us, regardless of our political stripes, can agree that that's not a good thing.
That's true. All right.
That's not something that the founding fathers ever had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that any of us would look at and say, oh, even if it was the best guy in the world, even if it was someone that you loved to death, someone that you thought was beyond reproach, we'd still look at that and say, wait a minute, you're putting your guy on the court over there.
Well, originally, president of the U.S. was supposed to be for life, but George Washington said no. He said, let's do terms.
Right.
Right?
Because he got sick of it, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for another thing, he realized that that was the best way to prevent revolution from happening in this country.
Mm-hmm.
That by the president stepping down and by all of our elected officials having terms...
Mm-hmm.
The people would have a mechanism for peaceful revolution.
Okay.
I don't know if he was the one that came up with that. Alexander Hamilton wrote that speech, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was Washington or Hamilton that came up with that. Probably Hamilton, because Hamilton was like Washington's ghostwriter.
Right, he was his boy.
For a long time.
Yep.
But it's a brilliant idea, because it basically says, hey, if you're fed up, like, wait a couple of years, you can throw these bums out and get new bums.
I don't know about the Supreme Court for life thing, though. Because they start going crazy. What about that senator that went like he was like 97 years old or something, and he was crazy, like that old Jayhawker they had a few years ago. And he finally died. Was it like Sturm or Hatch or what was his name? You know, that southern guy. You know what I'm talking about?
It wasn't Orrin Hatch.
He was there. He was there forever.
Yeah, the guy from
like Strom Thurmond.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Strom Thurmond.
But this is the thing.
He was crazy.
The appointment for life is actually a good thing, because it removes political pressure from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It's not like you're sitting there and, oh, I made an unpopular decision, now they're going to come for me.
Okay.
It has to work the way that it does. We don't have to have 9 justices. We can have as many justices as we want.
But what if you start having people lose their minds? What if they all get Alzheimer's? What do you do?
I don't believe there is any mechanism in place to remove a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it exists.
It should.
From what I've read of the Constitution, I've never seen that. Where it's like, if old Joe gets a little bit crazy, you can kick him down the stairs.
As far as we know, Ronnie went crazy and Nancy was running the White House. That's what a lot of people say.
Yeah, well, his chief of staff was running the White House.
Of course. But he definitely had lost his mind toward the end.
Oh, yeah. He was, Reagan is best described as passive during the last 2 years of his presidency.
Mm-hmm. Watched a lot of television.
They could roll him out for the speeches, but that was about it.
Yep.
So I don't have a problem with the lifetime appointment. I think it's good. I think it should be that way. You can't have judges fearful of political pressure when they make their decisions.
Well, that's why this guy decided to step down. He's just like, you know what? I don't want to do this.
Yeah. Well,
I want to go to Tahiti.
He was Anthony Kennedy was 81, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like,
how much life you got left in you?
You know, a lot of those guys get to that point and they're like, you know what? Enough is enough.
And he's
like,
just listening to people bitch and bitch every day. It's like, I want to go to Tahiti.
But some of them have stuck around longer, some of them have left earlier.
Yeah.
The problem of Trump appointing his own hearing judges is real. And one of the things about Kavanaugh was on the Star Commission that impeached, that helped to...
He's on the Star Search?
Yeah, well, Ken Starr.
I gotcha.
That helped to get Bill Clinton impeached.
Yeah.
And since then, he has come to the conclusion that no president... These are some of the things that he has said, that that Kavanaugh believes. No president should face a civil suit while in office. No president should face a criminal suit while in office.
Mm-hmm.
Presidents should be able to remove a special counsel at will.
That's too much.
If you're a president...
Nobody's above the law.
If you're a president who's potentially facing indictment, this is your guy. Now, I don't like the idea of the president picking his own judges. We can't have that in America. That's not how we do this. That's not how this republic works.
Right.
However...
It does have to be approved, though.
We need a Supreme Court justice because you can't have eight of them. You can't have an even number because what you wind up with is the situation we had where Antonin and Scalia died, where suddenly they're 4-4 deadlocked on everything.
Yeah.
You need an odd number so that you get an actual decision and can move the country forward.
Sure.
What I think needs to happen here is in his Senate confirmation hearings, Judge Kavanaugh, needs to take an oath and make a pledge in writing that he will recuse himself from any legal issues involving President Trump. And I will go a step further, and I will say that Neil Gorsuch needs to make that same pledge to the American people.
You think that's going to happen, though?
I think it should, because if you take both of them out of it, you still have an odd number of Supreme Court justices, none of whom have been appointed by the current president.
Yeah.
So you can get decisions on matters relating to Trump without the taint of Trump's appointment potentially coloring things.
Yep.
I think if they're sticking around while these decisions are made, it does serious long-term damage to the opinion of the American people of the Supreme Court, to the appearance of impartiality of the Supreme Court, to the value and the vitality of the Supreme Court.
I agree with that.
I don't think you can have that. You can't have the Supreme Court. You got two justices sitting there going, hey, you know, don't bother Trump. Trump's an okay guy. He put me here.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if that's not how they're deciding these things, that's the optics of it.
Of course, yeah.
You're basically giving free ammunition to the Democrats and free ammunition to all of Trump's opponents and free ammunition to everyone who hates the United States government to say, look at how corrupt this is.
Yeah.
Whether it is or not, it looks corrupt. And if it looks corrupt, that's good enough for most people.
I loved how you used the word taint, too, like in a very perfect way.
It's kind of what's going on.
It is.
That's kind of what's going on.
Good summation.
And it's a little sad. What do you want to know about my fourth?
How was it? You were up on a mountain.
I was up on a mountain. I was up on Mount Washington, actually.
Yeah.
I was there from Tuesday through, we left Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was hot.
Really? Even up on the mountain?
Yeah. You know how hot it was down here? That's how hot it was up on the mountain.
Really?
Yeah. And it was really kind of infuriating because usually, like, when it's baking, awful, humid, nasty down here.
Yeah.
You go up into the White Mountains and you're like, hey, it's nice. You know, it's like it's in the 80s and it's dry and beautiful mountain air. 95 and humid.
Really?
Yeah.
How were the fireworks? The
fireworks were awesome.
Yeah?
They do a great job with the fireworks up there. It is worth going up there at some point to see their fireworks because they put on a hell of a show.
Nice.
And they had a lot of really cool stuff. You know, some effects that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah, some fireworks. I like these ones that we've always talked about. We're both big fireworks fans. First of all, let's promote the idea that it should be legal in Massachusetts once more. This is ridiculous. It's just going on forever and ever. Come on.
We did this the week before the 4th.
I know.
One of two states.
It's going on forever.
One of two states left in the union where fireworks are legal.
Really? There's only two left,
yeah,
huh?
Delaware's the other
one.
Oh,
my God.
Is that company you want to be in?
That's ridiculous. Delaware.
If you're at a party.
Yeah.
If you're a state, if you're one of the 50 states at a party, and a state that you don't know walks up to you and says who your friends are.
Yeah.
You're best friends with Delaware. You're not going to admit that.
You're
going to be like, oh, I hang with Texas and California. What's Delaware doing over there? He just kind of follows me around.
The only good thing out of Delaware, George Thorogood and the Delaware Destroyers.
Yeah.
There's
some good blues that comes, blues and southern rock that comes out of Delaware. But other than that, we have no use for that state.
Yeah. I went to the beach. It was fun.
Which beach?
I went up to Salisbury. Yeah,
I like Salisbury.
Yeah.
They had fireworks, right?
I was right on the beach, and I had a fantastic time. I did dress up as Uncle Sam, and I played some guitar and some songs, and I was cheering everybody, and people took a lot of photos. It was a lot of fun.
Sweet.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Sounds like a good fourth.
Yeah.
I was a casualty of a piece of faulty patio furniture.
Oh, no.
I had a chair collapse under me.
Oh, no. That happened to me at a July 4th party a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And this
was. And I felt like an ass.
Well, this was worse because I landed on the part of my back I'm not supposed to land on.
Yeah.
And I also sciatica. Got wedged between the chair and the house.
Oh, no.
It was not.
Jesus.
It was not good.
Ugh.
So that kind of wrecked my fourth.
Yeah. I went to a party and they put out one of the plastic chairs, right? And of course, it had probably been sitting around for three or four summers. So
yeah.
I sat down, with my brew in hand and just went ass over tea kettle.
Yeah.
And I felt like a fool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who brought the elephant?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was the chair. I'm like, yeah, it was the chair, but I still feel like an ass. It's 200 people here.
Yeah.
Like, it's a nice way to come into a party.
Oh, who's the fat guy?
That's right.
That's immediately
right.
What everybody's like, oh.
That's right.
You're fatty over here, Ken.
They ended up getting me a nice steel chair after that. They're like, try to break this, fat guy.
I like it.
Yep.
I like it. All right, moving on. In world news, if I can find the world news, it's up here. UK Prime Minister Theresa May holds her office by a thread tonight following a series of devastating resignations among the Brexit team. Former London Mayor Boris Johnson left his position as Foreign Secretary just a day after Chief Brexit Negotiator David Davis stepped down. Both Conservatives cited last week's new Brexit negotiating position, which Davis said would leave the United Kingdom, quote, in at best a weak negotiating position and possibly an inescapable one, end quote. The new agreement that May supports would see the United Kingdom bend to EU rules on trade and travel, a sticking point for Conservatives who want to retake control of the UK economy. The resignations leave May vulnerable to a vote of no confidence that would dissolve the current UK government and trigger elections.
Hmm.
Not a good time to be Theresa May, especially with Donald Trump floating around in your country now.
A good time to visit England, though.
Yeah, well,
sound is a pound. It doesn't work anymore. It's going down.
Yeah, and this is the problem, because the UK government, the Tories, blame that on the European Union.
Right.
They're like, you are wrecking the value of our money. Mm-hmm. We are taking we're done with you. We're done with all of your rules about this is what things will cost and this is what things may move and ceding our sovereignty to you on trade issues so that we can run our economy the way we want to. Like what the president's doing over here.
Right.
Theresa May is like, no, well, they're not going to just give us that. So let's keep things the way they are. And the Conservatives are basically saying, no, we're not going to keep things the way we are. The interesting thing about this is there was a meeting last week at a place called Checkers. And
Checkers?
That's the name of it. And there is the so-called Checkers Agreement, where all of the members of Theresa May's cabinet basically sat down and said, this is what we can live with.
They had a pizza, they served beer and wine at Checkers?
I don't know about that. No. They had a meeting, they sat down, they said, this is what we can live with.
Uh-huh.
We'll go along with this. And then the weekend rolls around, and David Davis is like, no, I can't live with this. Mm-hmm. This is a bad deal. We're giving up too much. Europe is going to run our economy and tell us how to create trade rules. The whole point of Brexit was to stop that. Therefore, I'm gone.
Right.
And as soon as he's gone, the pressure mounts on Boris Johnson to get out, because Boris Johnson is very likely a head of the Tories and a potential prime minister somewhere down the road.
Right.
So he has to go. So now you've got all these conservative backbenchers who are sitting around saying, you know what? Let's just chuck May and let's go hardline on Europe.
Okay.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
The moderates in the government over there are afraid of that, and perhaps rightfully so, because the bloc of the European Union can just turn around and say, you know what? We're done.
Yeah.
No more trade with you at all.
Yep.
And the United Kingdom would not survive that level of isolation.
Sure, yeah. Whatever happened to that movement that was trying to get a re-vote on Brexit?
It's not going to happen. Yeah. It's not.
It was like 60% or something like that, wasn't it? It was pretty high.
Yeah, but it's not. The way that the Articles of the European Union are written, once you initiate the divorce process, there's no going back.
What I love, too, it's like, okay, let's all vote. And it's like, oh, we didn't get our way. Let's vote again.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. 60% of us got our way. And, like, a few of them rethinking their vote. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. All I'm saying is it's going to be cheap. Go to London. It's like $50 for a weekend.
I think the prices right now are kind of favorable.
Mm-hmm.
But the trade war is not likely to...
Like, you go to get, like, a ham sandwich is like 28 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The trade war is not going to help.
They still got the sterling there.
They're not too happy with us right now either.
Yeah.
So.
Give them time.
Yeah. It's, at the very least, I'd say wait until the shock of the World Cup loss.
Yeah.
Washes over them.
Oh, yeah. They're huge World Cup
fans. They need to cry and be sad for a week or so, and then we can go back over to the United Kingdom.
So England's out.
England.
All the big ones are out, right?
Yeah. Well, no. France is still there.
Oh, yeah. I saw the France one the other day. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
that was an overtime one.
Yay. And Croatia. Croatia, for the first time, is going to the World Cup final.
Oh, no kidding.
France won it not that long ago. France won it when it was hosted in France 20 years ago, maybe?
They got nothing else to do there but play ball. And drink wine.
England has not been to the finals of the World Cup in 52 years.
Has it been that long? I thought like 1990 they did really well.
1966 was the last time they made the finals, and they won.
There was a great New Order song, World in Order, from 1990. I thought England was in the finals.
No,
they do
the fight song every year. I think they make it into the knockout rounds consistently.
1966.
But yeah, 1966 is the last time that they won the World Cup.
Why are they so into it if they haven't won in so long?
Because they invented the sport. It's like it's their game.
Well, I guess it's the same with us and the Sox and the Patriots for so long.
Yeah, and they're like...
We still watch.
It's our sport. We're good at it.
Yeah.
You know, we created this. We kind of know what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody all over the world comes in and they're like, yeah, we're better than you are. So, I mean, they had a good run. They made it into the Final Four.
I went once. I had a great time.
I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But... And I do, I will watch the World Cup. I like the World Cup. Generally speaking, if you put soccer on, I'm like, it's not action-packed enough for me.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw Barbados, and I got a flag from a Barbadosian.
I grew up on sports where people tackle each other and fight each other and fight sometimes even though there's no fighting in the sport.
And that's just the family at home.
Yeah, like baseball, like nothing gets me going like a good bench-clearing brawl in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably several in the same game involving the Boston Red Sox and New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
That is the height of baseball for me. Like, regular baseball doesn't do it for me that much.
Yeah.
I'll watch
it. You like full contact baseball.
Yeah. I'm like, get out there and start hitting each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Man. I wish that would happen more. I really wish.
I'm a football guy. I don't make any bones about being a football guy.
Yeah.
Speaking of said football, the NFL Players Union filed a grievance with the National Football League yesterday over new rules surrounding the national anthem. Under an agreement accepted by the league's 32 owners in May, the NFL adopted new rules that require players to stand while the national anthem is played if they are on the field.
I agree with that.
Players who do not wish to stand can remain in the locker room until after the anthem is over. Violation of that rule could result in unspecified fines and possible player suspensions. In the grievance filed yesterday, the players argued that the league cannot impose the new rule outside of a collective bargaining agreement with the union. Both the players' union and NFL officials have agreed to meetings between the union's executive committee and the league instead of a court battle.
It's ridiculous. It's a business. If you work for McDonald's, you don't show up in a Burger King shirt and you know, flag everybody down.
You were correct about this.
Yeah.
You were correct about this. And when I was in the minority with this take, but when I heard the agreement, I was like, that's a reasonable compromise.
Mm-hmm.
If you are on the field, you stand. If you don't want to stand for the national anthem, wait in the locker room until it's over.
My opinion is you don't play.
You
don't play.
I don't necessarily disagree with that take on it either.
Yeah, that gets a little more extreme, but it's like, come on. It's like, this is a business, and you have to adhere to your business rules. We know, because, I mean, we work, you know, in private and public sectors. It's like, you know, you have to follow the rules while you're at work.
You're correct about this. You have no First Amendment rights as an employee of a company.
Yep.
Okay? If you're an NFL player and you are going out on the field and you are wearing the uniform of your team, you are a representative of your company.
Absolutely.
And all of your actions are going to be viewed as the editorial opinion of your company.
Yep.
And your company, the Patriots or the Falcons or the Cowboys or whatever, can sit there all day long and say, that guy doesn't represent our opinion, but that's not what matters. What matters is all of the thousands of fans see what's going on and say, why are you letting that person do that?
Exactly.
And I've been at a New England Patriots game where players kneeled, Patriots as well as opposing players, and they got booed.
Yeah.
And one thing that you don't hear a lot of at Gillette is booing.
Right.
There aren't much of it, because usually for a home game, there isn't much reason to boo anything. What you never hear at Gillette is angry booing. And that's exactly what this was.
Yeah.
It's
the worst kind of booing.
These are people who put a couple more beers in them and the fights are going to start.
Yeah.
This is one aspect of it that I don't think the players grasp at all.
Yeah.
Is that they are putting the safety of the fans in jeopardy.
Well, that's the other thing. Not only fights, but maybe an actual riot.
Yeah.
Because it's such a hot issue, and it's been going on for a while, you might actually see a riot happen.
And it's very rare for me to be in a situation in public where I'm like, I got to be looking over my shoulder because something bad could go down here. But that feeling was creeping into me.
Yeah.
At Gillette. Because the people who were booing were ready for bear.
Yeah.
They were ready to, like, take on anybody who was going to disagree with them about this.
Plus, add alcohol. There's plenty of people out there that want to fight.
Exactly.
Soon as
I mean, it's like you can get in a fight at a football game over nothing, okay?
Yep.
I was in one last year where I'm standing in line waiting at the locker room, which is the name of the gift shop, the souvenir stand.
Sure.
And as I'm standing there in line, a couple people, like, come walking over, and one of them walks up to the counter, and another one's kind of standing next to me, and it's very clear that they're trying to cut in line.
Right.
And so I say to the guy who's up front, who looks like an angry leprechaun.
Yeah.
I said to him, "Hey, line's back here." Guy turns around, walks right up to my face, and looks me in the eye, and he's like, "You got a problem, buddy?" All of a sudden, one of his compatriots is standing right at my side.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, I've been standing in line here for a while. The back of the line's back here."
Yeah.
And he stared at me, and I stared at him without blinking.
Yep.
He decided it wasn't worth it, turned around and walked away.
Gave you the crazy eyes, trying to stare you down.
Turned around and walked away.
Yeah, people suck.
At that point, the two guys in front of me turned around, and one of them looked at me and said, "I had your back if he did anything."
That's good.
And it's like, I'm just standing in line to buy a pen.
This is one of the things, too, is especially approaching and now in middle age, is like, I go out, you go to the Patriots, say you're spending $800 for the day, or the weekend, or whatever you're doing there, you know, say you're going to stay overnight, have some friends, you get your ticket, and then all of a sudden you get into a fight and get your ass beaten.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, you know, people just suck, man.
And it's, you hear about,
go on forever about it, but they just suck.
Gillette, as a general rule, isn't a bad place to go see a football game. There isn't a lot of fighting that goes on in the stands. There is some, but compared to some of the other stadiums around the league, Oakland,
sure,
Washington, we don't have a lot of those problems here.
Yeah.
So
for the most part, Patriot fans are pretty good. Yeah.
So when you hear angry Patriot fans, when I hear angry Patriot fans, it stops me in my tracks. And that's what the mood in that stadium was. I am all in favor
of NFL players using the platform that they have to promote the causes that they believe in.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. They should do that. You look at a guy like J.J. Watt, mm-hmm. all right? J.J. Watt, because he is a pro football player, raised more money for flood relief in Texas after the hurricane last summer.
Sure, yeah.
Than the Red Cross did.
That was nice, yeah.
And then he turns around and there's another disaster. And J.J. Watt isn't just taking the money and like it disappears. J.J. Watt's loading the trucks with the stuff that he bought with the money.
He's getting his hands dirty.
And making sure it goes out to people.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it's like, of course that guy's Walter Payton Man of the Year.
Yeah.
You know, these guys go out into their community. They build playgrounds. They build mm-hmm. houses for Habitat for Humanity. They visit hospitals.
Yeah.
And try and cheer up the kids. It's like, yes, by all means, use your platform. I am interested in hearing what you have to say.
But then you also have the other ones that take a knee and don't do a thing except collect their paycheck.
Even then, yep. I'm still interested in hearing what you have to say.
Sure.
I'm interested in hearing what anybody has to say.
Mm-hmm.
Except for 4 hours for 16 weeks out of the year,
mm-hmm.
maybe 20 if you're good enough.
Yeah.
For those 4 hours a week, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I want to see you play a game.
Yeah.
For those 4 hours, take your politics,
yeah.
put them in your pocket,
yeah.
and go do what you're there to do.
One of the trouble I have with concerts now, too. I mean, like, you know, REM was always big for that. You know,
yeah.
Bono was huge for that. And I actually almost got into a fight at U2 a couple of weeks ago where a lady actually turned around and shushed me and my friend because we were talking during a point where Bono was talking. And I said, is this your first concert?
Yeah.
And the guy that she was with, and I think it was her sister, they were just like, they were embarrassed by her. But it was bad. And like, what was funny is the lady next to me wasn't even with me, started like cheering, like yelling in the girl's face. I felt bad for the girl afterwards because she took my side and kind of stood up, which was kind of cool. But I felt bad for the lady because she had a lady screaming in her ear the rest of the concert.
Yeah.
But yeah, people generally suck. It's like, you know what? It's like, the other thing I said is we spent, you know, money on our tickets too. Go screw.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, you know.
I mean, it's with some artists.
You're in a concert hall.
The thing about it with a concert.
It's loud.
I expect whoever's up on stage is going to say something stupid at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's what you get.
Right.
Roger Waters took a knee.
Sure.
During that concert last fall.
Yeah.
It was like,
play a song.
The thing is, I respect Roger's politics and I respect where Roger comes from.
Yeah.
I thought that was beneath him. I thought that was grandstanding and unnecessary.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I would much rather hear his take on something because Roger Waters is very far to the left.
Yeah.
And he's very far to the left from sound and reasoned places.
Right.
And he can make a solid case for most of what he says
and
most of what he does. And in the cases where he can't, you can at least see that he's trying.
Yeah.
And this was just like, I'm going to take a knee because Trump's bad. And it's like, what? Come on, guy.
Yeah.
Come on.
And anybody that's been to a number of concerts knows that most of the stuff is scripted every night. You see Springsteen saying his heartfelt thing. He's saying it tomorrow night, too. He's saying it in Jersey. He's saying it in New York. It's the same damn thing. So it's like, you know what? If Bono wants to talk about Ireland and Sunday Bloody Sunday for a second, and he's done it in the last 40 shows I've seen it too, I'm going to ask my friend if she wants a beer.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's like, I've seen you two a bunch of times before.
It's like, I'm going to Checkers. I'm going to get some beer and wine and a pizza. I'll be right back.
I know what he's
going
to say next. Let me jump ahead. Well, I was going to save this for late in the show, but... No, I'm going to save that for later. Well, no, because you're going to like this, and you're here.
What's that?
In entertainment news.
Lando?
New Tom Petty album has been announced.
No, I didn't hear this.
Yeah. So here's the deal. Long After Dark is the name of the album, and this has been put together by Tom Petty's wife and Tom Petty's daughter.
But he already has an album out called Long After
Excuse me. It's called An American Treasure.
Oh, okay.
It is going to be a 3-disc box set.
Nice.
That is going to include unreleased tracks.
Nice.
Alternate versions of songs that you know.
Cool.
And live versions.
It's awesome. I'll tell you, that box set that came out before, years ago, from like 94, one of the best box sets ever.
The last track, the final track on CD3, this is a 3-CD set, is a performance of Hungry No More recorded at Boston's House of Blues.
No, that's great.
So there's a little local flavor for you.
Yeah.
But to get people psyched up for this album, which is, or box set, which is coming out on September 28th, they have released a brand new, at least new to us, it's been sitting in the vault for a while, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers song that was recorded during the Long After Dark sessions.
Really?
Yeah. So this is, we're going to play this right now here on WMFO.
Very nice.
This is called Keep a Little Soul. This is brand new Tom Petty music. And the one strike that I found in looking through everything that's on this,
yeah,
no Wilbury stuff.
Oh, that's too bad.
And nothing really from the sessions, like...
You would have to get all the permissions of everybody, though.
I think that's the issue here. There may be some stuff on this that is Jeff Lynne produced that has that...
Sure.
Wilbury sound, like 1987 to 1992, that era. But nothing that's like specifically Wilbury sessions.
Hey, it's quicker than Prince. Prince hasn't put out anything.
So here's some brand new old stock from Tom Petty right here on WMFO Medford.
One more count. So one and two. One, two, three.
If you're an economy-minded cook, your knife can be one of your best friends. By learning to use your knife wisely, you can get more value for your food dollar. You can buy a pork rib roast, for example, and cut the meat away from the bone. Then you'll have an elegant boneless pork roast, and there'll still be plenty of meat on the bones to barbecue like spare ribs. This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal.